WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The U.S. imposed 25% tariffs today on goods from Canada and Mexico and 20% on China imports. Canada responding with 25% tariffs on U.S. imports. ABC's Alexis Christophorus says prices on everyday staples from food, gas, and big-ticket items like cars could be going up.
Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. share supply chains when it comes to cars. Oftentimes, cars will go over the border several times in the making of that vehicle, so consumers expected to feel it there. And then if these tariffs are in place longer, we could be paying more for things like shoes, clothing, electronics as we move closer to Memorial Day.
President Trump will address a joint session of Congress tonight, talking trade, federal cuts and layoffs, along with talks to end Russia's war in Ukraine. Pope Francis, battling pneumonia, remains in a Rome hospital. The Vatican today says he has not had any new respiratory episodes since yesterday, but will sleep with a ventilator. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month. Colon cancer is one of the top three types of cancer in the world. It is diagnosed in 150,000 people a year, with 1 in 20 diagnosed dying from the disease. This month is a time to shine a light on the importance of early detection and lifestyle choices in the fight against this prevalent disease. Screenings can decrease your chances of dying from the disease by 90%. Trey Folkers is a doctor of gastroenterology at Amplify Health, Gunderson.
Screening tests are divided into two groups. There's cancer detection tests. Those are your stool-based tests, such as FIT cards, where you place a small amount of stool on a card and mail it in. It's looking for small amounts of blood in the stool that are usually released from large polyps or the cancers. And that's a FIT-based test that's done every year. There's something called Cologuard, which people have probably seen the commercials for, that examines an entire stool, and it is done every 3 years. It includes the FIT test, but also a DNA evaluation looking for those advanced polyps and cancers. Those tests are very good at diagnosing cancers early stage, which can then be treated usually surgically. In order to prevent those cancers, we do colonoscopy. That's considered a prevention test. And during your colonoscopy, if we find what the precancerous polyps, those are removed. And again, it's believed to reduce your risk of getting colon cancer by about 90%.
While the average age to begin screening for colon cancer is 45, it can be different for everyone. Folker says if you display any signs of colon cancer, you should see a doctor. The month of March aims to raise awareness about colorectal cancer, the second leading cause of cancer deaths in the United States. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
A setback for the Brewers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Brewers starting left-handed pitcher Aaron Ashby had to leave last night's spring training game in Arizona in the second inning. Manager Pat Murphy says it's an oblique muscle injury requiring an MRI. The Brewers went on to lose to the Reds 5-4. Ashby, the sixth Brewers pitcher, now dealing with an injury. NBA, the Bucks in Atlanta tonight to take on the Hawks. Milwaukee has won 6 of their last 7 games, and they've now moved up to 4th place in the NBA's Eastern Conference. The Badgers men team getting ready to play Minnesota in the Twin Cities. Head coach Greg Gard.
Yeah, it is a border state. You know, we've recruited that area really well. That area's been really good to us. We've got really good players from there. It's important in terms of a Big Ten tournament seeding. It's important to get the double bye if you can. And quite frankly, you boil it down to it's your next game and you're competitive and you want to win. The other stuff that can happen from that is a byproduct of, you know, doing good things on Wednesday night.
That's Wisconsin head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Showers move in this afternoon and some thunderstorms are possible. As rain ramps up into the night, around 1 to 2 inches of rainfall is likely. It'll then start to mix with some snow early tomorrow morning, where it puts down 1 to 2 inches of snowfall. It'll also be windy too, gusting up to 40 miles per hour. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 49.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Elon Musk. You're going to fire a bunch of folks. Well, that's going to, you know, increase unemployment. That's going to have an impact on the economy. The government buys farmers' goods for the USAID and no more USAID. Well, this thing's going to rot in the field. What happens to the prices? What happens to the farmers? What is the point here? It just seems like these are just such amateur decision-making, wasting our taxpayer dollars by wasting people's time.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll break down the presidential address with our friends Pat Kreitlow of Up North News Radio and Trigvi Olson of the Lincoln Project and see what's ahead for Ukraine. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays noon till 2. You're listening to News from the Center. WRCE.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A very big thank you to my last guest, Megan Rowe from Opportunity Wisconsin, discussing the attempts by Congressman Derek Van Orten, Brian Steele, Tom Tiffany, Jeff Fitzgerald, Glenn Grothman. I think that's all of them. I think I hit all of them in the Wisconsin congressional delegation on the House side to cut Medicaid and food assistance programs. They can't make the math work. They know this. They're lying about it. Now they're dodging their constituents and avoiding town halls. Rest assured, everyone, we will give you the numbers for of most recent importance, both Derek Van Orten and Brian Steele, in our show notes for today. My recommendation, give them a buzz. Maybe record the call. Be sure you identify yourself if you indeed are a constituent, as a constituent of the 1st and 3rd Congressional Districts as appropriate, because you deserve to get some answers. I know I want to hear what their explanations are, because I don't know how you get $888 billion in cuts without cutting Medicaid, when only $200 billion of that committee's expenditures are non-Medicaid. Just don't know. I don't know how the math works. It doesn't work that way. But we're here to talk about yet another abomination and undermining of basic government accountability, this time at the hands of Supreme Court candidate, current Waukesha County Circuit Court Judge Brad Schimmel. I'm joined by an expert in such matters, Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. Welcome back to the show, Jeff. It's a real pleasure to have you back.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much, Maggie.
All right. What is up? Explain to us. Let's not start with the actual court decision. Let's start at the begin the begin, as my mom would like to say. Explain to folks what Wisconsin's open meetings and open records laws are and how universally respected they are by both conservatives and liberals alike.
Wisconsin's been a leader in government transparency, and we have open records and open meetings laws that make sure that everyone in Wisconsin can follow and understand and watch what the government does. So if a government body, whether that is the legislature or a legislative committee, or it is a local city council or a school board or a committee within those organizations, is going to be conducting public business, they notice that meeting in advance so that people who are interested can watch or attend, and they have to conduct that business in public, not in private. This has been the law in Wisconsin for generations. As I said earlier, and you mentioned, Wisconsin is a leader in this. This is something that Wisconsin is recognized around the country for having been at the forefront of. And it's really part of our civic fabric and what makes our democracy in Wisconsin so strong.
It is. And having worked in government for a long time, I was very happy to always advise clients, listen, if there's any shadow of a doubt, let's err on the side of transparency and openness, all those really good things. And again, been around for well over 100 years here in Wisconsin. It establishes the public's right to see the business of government at work. Turning now to what occurred in Waukesha County, this involved a school board to which the open meetings laws applies, and they were trying to fill a vacant position. Tell us what happened next and what the problem was, Jeff.
Sure. This happened during COVID, and so the school board was meeting via Zoom, and they started by interviewing four candidates who were interested in filling this vacancy on the board. And the chairman of the board said, you know, for discussion purposes, to try to move things along, I'd like everyone to email me their first and second preferences here, and we'll see if we can move this forward. He said, these aren't votes. This is part of the discussion. And if at some point we have a consensus that at least four people, a majority of those of us participating in this meeting, support one candidate, then I will report that and ask for a motion that we could vote on here in public session. Initially, there was no consensus. After the first round of emails, the chairman of the board narrowed it down to two candidates. Coincidentally, when the emails came out later, it showed that both he and the vice chair, the two candidates they narrowed it down to, were their two preferences.
Weird.
They then discussed between these two candidates, and he asked for another round of emails. Send me who you would prefer. And it was deadlocked 3-3. He announced that. They discussed some more, and he asked for another round of emails. That round of emails was also deadlocked 3-3. However, he said that it was 4-2. And that his preferred candidate had the most votes. At that point, someone made a motion that person be appointed, that the candidate he said had the most votes be appointed, and that motion passed. That person took a seat on the school board going forward. This only came to light because later, an individual used the open records law to get copies of all these emails and looked at them and said, wait a minute, this isn't what happened at all. And so the candidate who got left out in this process sued and said, you violated the open meetings law. You were using these emails as part of a public discussion, but you weren't actually disclosing their contents. And that led to this misinformation. And Judge Schimmel,
if I can, I just want to hop in here to summarize the facts of this case so everybody understands this. You had the chair of a governmental body conducting personnel hiring decisions, which were required to be public, in a purportedly public meeting via secret emails that only he had access to, and lying about the contents of said emails, which ended up resulting in the guy that he wanted to get the job getting the job. That's what happened here. By the way, I'm just going to make this note. Having been someone who served as a public lawyer for a long time, I'll just say this. Whomever was the lawyer for the school board that did this, yeah, that's when you light your hair on fire and say, stop the proceedings. Secret emails do not comport with Wisconsin open meetings law. This isn't how we're going to do things here. But basically, it was the veneer of compliance with the open meetings law, but the use of secret emails, misrepresentations of what those emails said. The secret emails, even arguably as a process point, I would say, didn't comply with the open meetings law, even had the chairperson gotten the votes correct. But he then made it even worse by lying about the votes and ended up, you know, magically, little quinky dink here, the guy that he wanted to get the job got the job, even though that's not what the vote said. It's pretty astounding. About as clear cut of a violation of the open meetings law as I have ever seen in over 20 years of governmental law practice. But apparently Judge Schimmel didn't see it that way, Jeff, did he?
No, he didn't. And it is pretty amazing. As the Court of Appeals said, it's stunning that the chair later in his brief said that the entire process was, quote, entirely transparent, end quote. When, of course, the whole point it was anything but. And entire transparency is what we expect and what the law demands from our public servants when they are making public decisions. And Judge Schimmel got around this. He said that the lawsuit failed and that there was not a problem here. And that in itself,
what can
is,
see? I mean, it's such a stupid decision. But what arguable crud did he try to throw up on the wall to explain away this absurdity?
Well, that in itself is also upsetting, because what he said is there was no intent to hide anything here. And the way he knew that, he said, was that when there was an open records request for the emails, it was fulfilled. So, in other words, you did something that was totally illegal. But then later when
you
someone
cured it.
Right, but it doesn't cure it. And
no.
and by the way, giving out those emails was only required by the open records law. It's not as if he did it out of the goodness of his heart or he was trying to make up for this. He says, to be clear, that the chair says it was a mistake, that he didn't realize it was tied 3-3 again, but he never tried to correct that mistake. He never did anything about it. He never disclosed it. And so what Judge Schimmel said is there was no intent here. There's the problem, Maggie, you probably know this.
Yeah.
Intent is not an element
it's irrelevant.
Of a file. It's not
it's
part
not
of an open records case.
I mean,
well, and it's more than it's not in the statute. In 1979, the Wisconsin Supreme Court unanimously said that intent is irrelevant to this. And so if Judge Schimmel had merely done the most simple of legal research, he would have found that the explanation he offered for saying that there was no violation here was incorrect and was counter to settled, longstanding Wisconsin law. And I think that's part of what's so amazing about this. As you know, the Court of Appeals in this state, you know, our circuit courts are generally doing a pretty good job. Most of the time, the Court of Appeals affirms what happened below in only
it's like over 90%. Yeah, it's like 90% of the time.
Exactly. And only 9% of the time does the Court of Appeals in Waukesha overturn a judge on a civil thing. And here you have it's the most conservative part of our Court of Appeals in the entire state overturning unanimously this decision by Judge Schimmel and really calling it pretty shameful.
Folks, this is Jeff Mandel. He's my special guest this half hour from Law Forward. We're discussing, this is my language, not my guests, Shady Schimmel, the shameless shill, inability to read the most basic concepts of law and get them correct in cases that are absolutely essential to your ability to hold your governmental elected officials and public servants accountable. When we talk to folks, it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, everybody wants to be able to hold their governmental elected officials accountable. Brad Schimmel, candidate for our Supreme Court coming up in an election in less than a month, said just the opposite. I want to dig into this idea that in his ruling he talked about that there was no intent to deceive and how, frankly, in my legal opinion as a lawyer, that is so dumb. And secondly, no factual record really to support that sort of a strong inference and why the open records and open meetings law here in Wisconsin have nothing to do with intent. We're going to return with my very special guest, Jeff Mandel, after these brief messages. My name is Maggie Dawn. You want to hold government accountable? Well, stay tuned. We discuss more after these brief messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the center, WRCE. You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported last year that the Trump transition team had been funding itself through unknown private donations and refused to sign a General Services Administration transition support memo, which limited private donations to $5,000. The memo was never signed, and the transition's private donors still haven't been disclosed. Nonprofit news site Notice reports that previous transition teams disclosed that information by February 19th, including Trump's first transition. In November, Trump's chief of staff promised to disclose those donors. The Presidential Transition Act of 1963 allows money controlled by the GSA to fund presidential transition expenses, including office space, personnel, IT, and other support services to aid incoming and outgoing administrations. That funding is contingent on the incoming administration signing a memo of understanding and the $5,000 limit on private donations. But while Trump's team agreed on the terms of the new administration's move into the White House, it refused to sign GSA's transition support memo, allowing it to sidestep the limits and disclosure requirements. So between November 7th and January 20th, it's likely millions were received from wealthy donors and corporations, and Americans still don't know who funded its transfer of power and the influence it bought. We've linked the Notice report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I'm very excited. It is my pleasure to welcome tonight my old pal, Dr. Kristen Lierley. I told the entire listening audience that I rub my feet together sometime when I watch TV, and I called it self-cuddling. And it's like the only thing we do where we rub our own bodies when we relax, you know.
Is it? Are you telling that to a gynecologist? Pete, come on.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
For Brad Schimmel, for every government cover-up, a fig leaf of an excuse. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a very special guest with us this half hour, and we've got Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley coming up next on the show to discuss his reactions and the risks to not just Milwaukee County residents, but all Wisconsin residents from the MAGA budget proposal, offering up $1.1 trillion in tax cuts to the top 1% of income earners while wiping out $1.1 trillion in Medicaid and food assistance benefits. You're not going to want to miss that discussion. But let's get back into this great discussion with Jeff Mandel from Law Forward, discussing a decision from the Court of Appeals that sits over the Waukesha County Circuit Court, where Supreme Court candidate and current Waukesha County Circuit Court Judge Brad Schimmel sits. Brad Schimmel had the opportunity to make clear the Wisconsin open meetings law when there was an obvious and blatant violation of the open meetings law by a school board. And instead of simply reading the law and following it, Brad Schimmel made up something entirely out of whole cloth to excuse the lack of transparency and accountability to the citizens of Waukesha County. As Jeff explained last segment, what Judge Schimmel said, that even if you obviously and blatantly violate the Wisconsin open meetings law, which ensures that the public has access and can see the workings and operation of government, even if you blatantly violate that law, if you really didn't mean to, judged by I don't know what standard, it's completely fine, and found in favor of the government body that had violated the open meetings law. Problem is, of course, the Wisconsin open meetings law does not require intent to violate it to find a violation of it. And the reason for that's pretty gosh darn plain, Jeff. If intent were an element, then the government could violate the open meetings law all the time and say, I'm sorry, I just didn't mean to do it. Am I getting that about right? I mean, I found his logic around intent to be laughable in the extreme. It would basically eviscerate our government transparency laws.
It would, because the purpose of government transparency is to protect the public, not to protect the public servants, not to protect the office holders. I mean, I think the Court of Appeals really made it as clear as possible. It said, this case provides an excellent example of the real-world impact of failing to adhere to open meetings law requirements. The secrecy of the process used here allowed the chair to erroneously announce his own preferred candidate as the winner, and no one was in a position at the time when it mattered to monitor the process. That's the whole point. It doesn't matter what he intended. It doesn't matter if it was a mistake or it wasn't. The fact that they weren't doing it in open session with full discussion that the public could hear is what created the possibility for this outcome. If they had done it right, this never could have happened.
Right, that the error, the wrong candidate, wouldn't have been chosen had they simply complied with the public meetings law, which brings me to our caller, Jesse from Madison. You've got a couple of thoughts about Judge Schimel's lame conclusion that there was no intent in this case. Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, so not only did he get the case law obviously wrong, as you mentioned, that intent doesn't even matter. It's worse than that, because his ruling suggests there was no bad intent by the chair of the school board, when his behavior is prima facie evidence that there was bad intent. It's like obvious on the plane of it, and then on, you know, on the nose of your face. And not only that, but this school board chair lied to other elected officials, the other members of the school board, when he said this was a 4-2. So is that some kind of fraudulent activity? I mean, he sent this in some kind of, you know, wired communication, a Zoom. So you've got that going on. But then you have the judge, Mr. Schimel, who not only erroneously ruled on the case law itself, but erroneously said there was no bad intent when there very clearly was, which means Judge Schimel has shown malice against the rule of law.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jesse. And to just add some emphasis to what Jesse from Madison just said, and thank you for the very insightful call and the dropping of a little legalese Latin for all of our listeners today. I love it. Prima facie evidence, meaning evidence that in its first instance, in the most reasonable and obvious interpretation, clearly lend to an inference of bad faith here or bad intent. And that is the fact that A, he used secret communications, B, did so a number of iterations, was actively misreporting the results of same. For a circuit court judge, any judge, to conclude that, oh, I'll just decide that that was good intent, because eventually when he got called out and the open records were requested, that showed that there was no bad intent. Yes, the facts on their face give just an equal, I think, if not more persuasive interpretation that would lend itself to the conclusion that the chair was operating in bad faith. Jeff, what should voters glean from this as they go into the polling places in early voting and on April 1st to decide if this man who can't read basic case law correctly or our statutes correctly should be a Supreme Court justice?
Well, sure. I just want to say at this juncture in our conversation that Law Forward is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization and doesn't take sides in elections. But this is an important case. We see so many TV commercials, right, that tell us, oh, this, they're slinging mud back and forth about who's going to follow the law, who's not going to follow the law. This is a concrete example where common sense and established precedent point in the same direction. And this is an important issue of law that is about our democracy and is about how our government works. And Judge Schimel was once the attorney general of this state, and which means he was in charge of enforcing these transparency laws. This is not something new to him. This is not something where he didn't know. And I think that people should be looking at this and thinking about, what do I learn about how he sees democracy and the law? And what do I learn about how he thinks about precedent based on this case?
I'll tell you what I think. The man can't read case law, can't get it right, and especially, most importantly, when it comes to transparency in government, egads, what hot water we would be in as a state if he is elected to the Supreme Court. My opinion, not my great guest, Jeff Mandel's of Law Forward. Can't wait to have you back, Jeff. Many thanks. Up next, we've got County Executive David Crowley talking about the impacts to you and yours from the MAGA cuts to the benefits that we all rely upon. Next on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Back and forth between the U.S. and our trading partners regarding tariffs, that's what's driving markets today. I'm Stephanie Hoff. Along with you on a Tuesday, you're listening to the Midwest Farm Report. U.S. tariffs took effect at 12:01 this morning. Agriculture is in the crosshairs for many retaliatory measures from other countries. Market advisor John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing dives in on what commodities are at the greatest risk of losing market space. He's got a full list of targets that China's announced.
China's the first one to step up to the plate on the overnight session. They announced that there's going to be a 15% tariff on U.S. chicken, wheat, corn, cotton, and an extra levy of 10% on soybeans, pork, sorghum, beef, aquatic products, fruits and vegetables, and dairy imports as of March 10th, in addition to another 15% levy on U.S. exports to China. And, well, that will hit about 15% of U.S. exports into China. And so, again, so there's our first news on retaliatory tariffs.
John Heinberg, along with us from Total Farm Marketing in West Bend, he welcomes questions. Visit them at totalfarmmarketing.com. Don't go anywhere. We'll take a look at how markets closed the day next.
Well, hold on to your britches, everybody. It's time to go nuts at the Springfield Corners Testicle Festival. March 8th, you can enjoy deep-fried delicacies along with ice-cold beverages and live music by the Lights Out Band. Join me, the fabulous Farm Babe, along with the rest of the Midwest Farm Report team at Springfield Corners for your chance to win concert tickets and to try some fried Rocky Mountain oysters. It all kicks off after 2 p.m. on March 8th. Springfield Corners. See Facebook for more details.
On the close Tuesday from Chicago, commodity prices are not pretty. We'll start with dairy products. Barrel cheese closed down a nickel and a quarter at $1.73. The 40-pound block cheese down 11.5 cents at $1.60.5. AA butter closed down 9.5 cents at $2.25. Class 3 milk contracts are down double digits. The April contract is down 44 cents at $17.65 a hundredweight, and the May contract is down 35 cents at $17.81. Grain markets continue our trend in the red. Cash corn closed 4.75 cents lower at 4.51.5. December new crop corn down 4.5 cents at 4.46¾. Cash soybeans closed 12.5 cents lower at 9.99 a bushel. November new crop soybeans down 15.25 cents at 10.03½. And July new crop wheat closed 10 cents lower at 5.51¼. As we heard from market advisor John Heinberg with Total Farm Marketing earlier, the discussion on tariff retaliation from our trading partners is driving numbers today. We're working to keep you informed as news develops. Follow along with us at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Stephanie Hoff.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Showers move in this afternoon and some thunderstorms are possible. As rain ramps up into the night, around 1 to 2 inches of rainfall is likely. It'll then start to mix with some snow early tomorrow morning, where it puts down 1 to 2 inches of snowfall. It'll also be windy too, gusting up to 40 miles per hour. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 49.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
The Todd Alba Show.
Think about how many people in our communities, our friends, our families, our neighbors, our postal workers, carriers, people that work at our Veterans Affairs hospitals, USDA. Here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump's lieutenant, thinks of all the people I just mentioned.
Federal employees do not deserve their jobs.
That's what Donald Trump and MAGA believe if you are a federal worker.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me as we find out what happened to USAID with Christina Dry, speechwriter and communications analyst for the agency.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Could use a beautiful day and some sun beating down and the radio on and each and every one of you, but instead we've got a Trump quasi State of the Union. Thank goodness we've got my very special next guest to join us to help us make sense of it all. It is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley joining us from the Longworth Building in the halls of Congress. Welcome back to the show, David. Thanks for making time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
I was very impressed and a wee bit surprised that you were so specific and issued a press release in response to the House budget resolution. Tell us why you did so and what you're concerned about, David.
Well, I think it's important that everybody, not just within Milwaukee County, but in southeastern Wisconsin, in the states and across this country, people are paying attention to what is actually happening in Congress. That's one of the reasons why I'm out here today on Capitol Hill, you know, working with many of my counterparts through the National Association of Counties Legislative Conference. And what I'm really afraid of is not being able to deliver the promises that we say that we're going to deliver when it comes down to local units of government. And so we've been here, one, representing not just Milwaukee County, but the chair of the Large Urban Counties Caucus, where we've been prioritizing and having conversations about the cuts that we don't want to see. First and foremost, I think there are many people in this community who understand that cuts to Medicaid, and particularly cuts to Medicare, are extremely crucial. We do not want to see that happening in our communities. We know how that's not only going to affect our seniors, but we know how that's going to affect our children, and not just in urban centers, but in many rural areas. And so we really want them to focus on the true impacts for issues that affect urban counties like Milwaukee. Like, what are we doing to increase, you know, the mental health and substance use investments? How are we investing in transportation and infrastructure, focusing on health like maternal and infant mortality, housing accessibility, things that the American people really care about. And so I'm glad to be here. But again, I'm here talking to legislators, talking to congressional members, working with my counterparts, but I am not here to hear the president speak tonight.
I can't blame you for that. I would be skipping it myself. It wasn't part of my gosh darn job every day. Just to put not too fine a point on it, Medicaid covers 1 in 5 people in the United States, including nearly half of all of our children. That is 1 in 2 children receive health benefits and supports in some way through Medicaid, including as well over 8 million seniors. In Wisconsin, more than 1.2 million people are enrolled in Medicaid, including well over 60% of senior citizens that are in residential nursing home facilities. These cuts would be devastating across the state of Wisconsin. David, what have you been hearing from folks across the country, other county leaders, both urban and rural counties, at the National Counties Association Legislative Caucus meetings? And what are you hearing from Wisconsinites and Milwaukeeans about these proposed cuts?
Well, what I can tell you is that being out here is a great opportunity. You meet different people from different states that have different issues than you. And I have to tell you about a conversation that I actually had last night, right? I met a guy from rural Minnesota who happens to be a huge Trump supporter. And when we were having the conversation about what is happening in the federal government and how we're feeling the squeeze, particularly at the local level within county, within counties, one of the things that he kept talking about was the fact that these Medicare and Medicaid cuts will be extremely impactful on their community. They have a community of about 18,000, right? But majority of their population are seniors and they're living in long-term care facilities. And so for them, they're wondering, how are we gonna pay these bills? How are we gonna be able to take care of our entire population if he's going to be making, you know, these types of cuts to the Medicare and Medicaid program? And so not only am I hearing that from rural places and, you know, from our rural members within the National Association of Counties, but even back at home, there are many people. When we think about the children that are going to be affected by these cuts, should alarm every single one of us. I think many people forget that close to about 40% of the people who are on Medicaid are children, right? Or yeah. Medicare, these are children, right? We are literally we're having a conversation about removing healthcare access, healthcare services from our youngest and most vulnerable population right here in our own community. And we just, quite frankly, we can't have that. But I do think this is an opportunity, right? An opportunity for many of your listeners, everyone in our community, to start standing up and making sure to speak out. And so I want to encourage everyone, right? You know, you can make phone calls, but many of those voicemails are not full. And they may not even be checking the voicemails because they don't want to talk to you. So let's make sure that we're sending an email. Let's make sure that we're utilizing social media. And when you send that email, right, make sure that you're even talking to the people who are on your side. Have them copying on these emails so we can have a paper trail to everyone who's receiving these so we understand how to bring the level of accountability that's needed in order to stop these cuts.
David, if I may ask, would you want either your campaign or Milwaukee County copied on those emails? And if so, what email address should folks put in their CC lines as they reach out to Congressman Van Orten, Stile, Fitzgerald, Grothman, and Weed here in the Wisconsin delegation?
Absolutely. You can definitely email us. Our email is countyexec@milwaukeecountywi.gov. But I will say we have great champions in Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Mark Pocan, as well as Congresswoman Gwen Moore. And you should be copying them as well on that email so they can have a trail and be able to bring that to their colleagues.
Folks, we'll put all of those emails for Senator Tammy Baldwin, Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Congressman Mark Pocan, as well as the email that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley just mentioned. County Executive, we're on day two of pretty significant losses in the market with Donald Trump's announcement that he is going to be moving forward with crippling tariffs that are going to hurt farmers in Wisconsin, costing them billions in revenues, tariffs applying to China, Canada, and Mexico. As people look forward, Donald Trump admittedly and self-proclaiming that he was elected based on grocery prices. What should Wisconsinites be thinking about next as we enter this phase of a trade war with some of our largest trading partners, both in this hemisphere and with China?
Well, one, all of us should be extremely concerned about what is happening right now. Not only will this raise prices for many businesses in our community, but this is going to raise prices on consumers. And we can see an immediate effect because I think many people may not know, right here in the state of Wisconsin, we rely on a lot of energy coming from Canada, right? When we think about the gas that we're putting into our cars every single day, you know, that crude oil is coming from Canada. So this is going to affect our pocketbooks. And so we're going to see these increases. But this is why we need people to get involved, right? I know we are elected officials, and I want folks to understand that we are fighting every single day to make sure that our representatives right here in Congress understand what these impacts are going to be. And this is also going to, you know, stifle our ability when it comes down to local units of government to really, you know, take hold and really continue to invest in those safety net programs, because we won't be able to invest in those programs due to the rising costs. Right. We're seeing inflation. We're seeing the rise in all of these prices. And Donald Trump doesn't care about anybody but his damn self. I'm just saying it like it is. And so until we get our congressional members to do the right thing, to stand up, particularly in the Republican Party, stand up to the mess that we're seeing, it's going to be very difficult for us to be able to dig ourselves out of this hole. And so I want the people to understand that we all have a role to play when it comes down to stopping the bad things that's happening within the federal government. And so let's make sure that we do everything that we can. But right now, you know, we're talking to our state members as well. And thank God for Governor Tony Evers, trying to think ahead as far as what investments we need to make in this 2025-2027 budget, because he's thinking about how these cuts are going to affect everybody across the entire state of Wisconsin. And so you should be also calling your representative, your state senator, and letting them know how you support this particular budget and how we need to move forward in general and standing up, quite frankly, to dictatorship right here in our country.
Folks, that's Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley talking about all of the potential impacts, not just on Milwaukee County residents, but across the state of Wisconsin, as the confluence, as the intersection of these middle class crushing policy decisions by the Trump administration begin to come down the pike. That's the next question I wanted to ask you, David. We've talked about the House budget resolution and how it proposes absolutely life-threatening cuts to both Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, food assistance that feeds so many of our families here in the state of Wisconsin. The intersection of those cuts, the proposed cuts that are coming to Social Security and Medicare as well, the intersection of that with this trade war with Canada, Mexico, and China, I can't imagine. It's like we're walking right into the Bermuda Triangle of middle class badness. I can't imagine an agenda that is more anti-working person, anti-merit, anti-middle class than what we've got now. How should individuals, in addition to reaching out to their elected officials, are there tips or thinking that you have about how people should be preparing for this grave period of uncertainty and potential economic hardship?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, one, I don't want folks to, you know, run out and go to the grocery store right now trying to stock up on tissue and all these different things.
Don't do that.
Yeah, we don't need that, right? But again, I think right now it's really about, one, we have to create our own networks, right? And I think this is really going to, you know, kind of force people to, one, get to know your neighbors a little bit more, right? Understanding who lives in your neighborhood, what are the needs that people may have? So because we're going to have to lean on one another, right? And so many people may not be able to afford that milk or those eggs. And so how are we working as a community to make sure that we're leaning on one another to get through this, quite frankly, this uncertain period of time in our lives? And this is something that we haven't quite seen before, because usually there's an end goal. Right. Yeah. There's no end goal when it comes down to this. We are just seeing someone who is making erratic decisions because they feel like they need to be a bully to Canada and Mexico, to be quite frank. But these are our neighbors. And one, we need to make sure that we're embracing one another locally, but also across the entire state of Wisconsin. These cuts are not going to just affect one county, one city, one town, or one municipality. It's going to affect all of us. And so we're going to have some conversations about what we need to do at the state level. Again, leaning on our state government, leaning on Governor Evers and our legislators to do the right thing and making sure to repair the harm that we see coming down this pipeline.
Prepare and repair. Words from Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. I really want to elevate and lift up, David, your affirmation that we need to be looking out for one another, our neighbors, our colleagues. How are people doing? Look, if you have an extra couple of shekels, if you have a little bit of extra time, some donations, looking out for those who may find themselves in food insecurity or housing insecurity, to get involved with our election process. And of course, to be sure that you are registered and ready to vote, get your voting done before April 1st. And if you can't do that, make a plan to vote on April 1st. Bring a buddy, bring a friend, bring a family member, but let's get it done, Wisconsin, on April 1st. David, I just want to say to you, my most heartfelt thanks for all of your work on behalf of Milwaukee County at the National Counties Association Legislative Conference this week. And please, to all of my former colleagues and friends at Milwaukee County, give them my best. Tell them to keep up the good fight. We're all counting on them. Folks, it's been my big pleasure to talk with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. Also, a good quotable this afternoon: Donald Trump just looking out for his damn self. Hear, hear, David. It's always good to talk to you. Folks, when we come back, I'll give you my final thoughts on this very busy Tuesday of news as we look to a Bermuda Triangle that's coming for the middle class here in this country. Keep it locked. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You've got some thoughts? I want to hear them. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Back with more in just a moment.
News from the center, WRCE.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Judge Brad Schimmel is an anti-choice politician whose positions are too extreme for Wisconsin women. He supports a pre-Civil War law that bans abortion. But don't take our word for it. Hear it in his own words.
1849, ban on abortions. Which, by the way, what is squat about that law?
The 1849 abortion ban provides no exceptions for rape or incest.
What is squat about that law?
The 1849 law criminalizes doctors and their patients.
What is squat about that law?
Brad Schimmel supports an 1849 law to ban abortion with no exceptions. Tell Brad Schimmel, extreme politics don't belong on Wisconsin's Supreme Court. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
Matt Nair on air.
A lot of federal employees got this fork in the road letter. You can stay, but you're not really guaranteed anything. Luann's husband is a Vietnam veteran.
I wrote a letter to President Musk. My husband put his life on the line for our country.
Wow.
You are putting my husband's life on the line right now by cutting all those programs that are keeping him alive at the VA. Please call your legislators and tell them to stand up. This is not what America is.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Welcome back, everybody. We are indeed going to have to ride the storm out. The Bermuda Triangle coming for the middle class here in Wisconsin. I think many of us are about to be crushed by Donald Trump's misguided, self-interested policy proposals. Let me explain, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. 855-752-4842-855-75-CIVIC. Here are the three pieces of the Bermuda Triangle that Donald Trump has whipped up that are going to, I think, crush the middle class and working folks in this country. The first is, of course, a trade war with China, Canada, and Mexico. He's signed on to it. It's official. This is going to make housing more expensive. It's going to devastate agriculture. It's going to drive up prices at the gas pumps. Remember those little stickers that they put on with Joe Biden pointing, saying, I did this. We're about to have that happen here. The second stool, and Calvin, am I getting a little static here? Because I'm going to pop out and come back in. Here we do, folks.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. We've had a great show today. We talked to Jeff Mandel from Law Forward. He had a lot to say about Brad Schimmel running for the Supreme Court race. I really suggest you go and check that out. It is the first half hour of this hour, and Maggie is back.
Hey, Kelvin and everybody. Ah, yes, at least once a show, we got a little fuzz on it. I was explaining the Bermuda Triangle that's coming for the middle class. The first is the trade war. It's going to make everything more expensive. And those costs will be passed on to you. It's going to create inflationary pressures. When we did this the first time, when Trump did this in his first administration, and by the way, he had to take over $26 billion of your tax dollars to shore up agriculture in the form of direct payments to farmers after their businesses were devastated because China basically stopped importing agricultural products from the United States. When this happened the first time, we were in a very low inflationary environment. We're not there now. So not only is the trade war going to make everything more expensive, it's going to drive up inflation. So hold your horses. Do you think housing is expensive now? Just wait. It's going to get worse. Leg number two of the Bermuda Triangle coming to you and for you, courtesy of Donald Trump, is this attack on government benefits that people have earned, like Social Security, veterans benefits, Medicaid, Medicare, food assistance programs. This coupled on the second leg with this unbelievable dismantling of the federal government. Now, listen, I will always advocate so strongly for doing everything that we should to curb fraud, waste, and abuse, to audit and improve government, and in some places, maybe reimagine government, to do things entirely different, to make sure it is efficient and effective for the middle class. But willy-nilly cuts made by a bunch of pimply, barely out of pubescence technocrats who have never worked in government before, who are in their early 20s, all orchestrated by a billionaire overlord, ain't the way to get there, folks. And the third leg of the stool is the rank corruption. Money in politics is bad. I hate it when Democrats take it, when Republicans take it. But you know what's worse? Unelected billionaires deciding how our federal government's going to be run. You know what's worse? A president issuing his own cryptocurrency and accepting $200 billion in purchases and acting like it's not some sort of violation of self-dealing. All of this is so, so very bad. And when you look at the corruption in light of what they are going to fund with all of these benefit cuts and so-called efficiency measures, which is simply tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations, doesn't have to be this way. I'm all for smarter, better, more effective government. And I'm going to tell you this, it ain't what Trump's doing. And just because he says it is, doesn't make it so. Let's go to the phones. Ollie from the Northwoods, you're up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Go ahead.
Well, to go along with what David Crowley just was talking about, yesterday I had contacted Governor Evers' office and proposed a plan that I call We Care Wisconsin, Empathy in Action, and just said that the government could help the farmers, and private groups could help finance farmers in exchange for farmers hiring federal workers, and farmers could also donate a portion of their unsold produce because of the tariffs. They could donate some of that to school lunch programs, and then also take some students onto their farms and teach them the importance of farming and growing their own food.
Ali, I love these ideas, and I think this is right in the exact lane that we should be thinking. How can we work together to support our farmers, our neighbors, our young people, especially as we're being told by Donald Trump and the MAGAs that government isn't in the business of making sure everybody's okay anymore. Government ain't in the business of supporting the middle class and working people. It's in the business of tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations. And, you know, maybe 20-aught billion in contracts for the billionaire overlord, Elon Musk. No self-dealing here. Nothing to see here, folks. Oy vey. We'll be back tomorrow. I've got Senator Hasselbein for Broad Appeal at 3 p.m. Don't miss that. My name's Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a couple of guest hosts in for Dom Salvia up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Take care.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Earl Ingram.
Welcome to Campaign for Lead Free Water with Governor Evers' efforts to address the lead issue. Following that, we will have Dr. Robert Craig join us to talk about Trump's discussion with Congress.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
Did you know VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served?
In the military, we make a lot of sacrifices, and with the VA loan, it makes it easier for us to get a home.
We were able to purchase this home and then use the money that we were going to use as a down to actually fix up the home. I would tell anybody who is interested in getting a VA loan to just do it.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and a trade war looming after the U.S. kicked off tariffs today, 25% for goods from Mexico and Canada, and China goods hiked to 20%. ABC's Alexis Christophorus says Americans already struggling with inflation could see higher prices.
Target's CEO came out today and warned that prices at his stores will probably rise in the coming days in the food aisles. If you're in the market for a new car, these tariffs could add at least $3,000 to the price tag of a new car. That's because Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. share supply chains when it comes to cars.
Tonight, President Trump addresses a joint session of Congress outlining his economic agenda that includes sweeping federal cuts and layoffs. Today, rallies from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco, protesting against Elon Musk and the Doge team's dismantling of key programs. In Rome, Pope Francis continues to battle pneumonia. The Vatican says Pope Francis has had no new respiratory crises, but will sleep with a ventilator. This is ABC News.